Welcome to The Creative Fault, a weekly podcast that is for creatives and artists. Get your weekly gems and jewels when you want to self-improve, educate, sprouts up your lifestyle, and just get some little bit of entertainment along the way. Welcome to The Creative Fault.
Hey, you guys, what is up? This is your girl, Marilva, and I'm back with another episode of The Creative Fault. The Creative Fault is a podcast where you get to pick up, receive, collect, and enjoy creative jewels that help you support your own independent journey as an artist or creative, or as I like to call them, CNAs. Not CIAs, but CNAs, creatives and artists. So welcome back to another episode. Happy that I can be back. It's been quite the week for me, but I'm here to give you all a very interesting and fun outlook on the creative artistic field. And of course, share some pointers, share some tips, but more so to share some perspectives that definitely will be there for you to use. So for those that are new, welcome. Welcome to the second episode. I won't be saying every time which episode it is, but just, you know, to make sure which episode it is of this year is the second episode. I think after the third one, I'm going to stop saying it. It won't be necessary for me which episode it is, which number it is. But anyway, it's the second episode. And we're just going on strong. And in each episode, I ask you as the audience, how are you doing? How are you feeling? And an even more important question here is, are you making time? Are you making space for the things that are important to you right now at this particular moment? Are you doing that? Are you capable of saying no to the things that really do not matter right now? And of course, we all have a different understanding of what is important and what is of the essence to do. But in a lot of cases, we will come to the conclusion that the things that are most important to do are those little steps in between that will have a beautiful result of what you would like to see later on. And when you don't do that, you will come to the conclusion that you just, I want to say, wasted your time. You invested your time not really efficiently and also not effectively. So the question in this, are you making the time? Are you creating the space? Are you postponing things? Are you keeping things for a later moment? Why? Why are you keeping things for a later moment? I think the last 3 years have taught us that now is the best time. And even if you do not see the results 3 months from now or next week or a year from now, it is important to make your steps towards what it is that you're doing, especially establishing your presence as a CNA and having a vision for yourself, having your own platform. And trust me, it doesn't have to be a platform that is 10,000 followers big, 100,000 followers looking at you. No, it's beautiful if you have that. I'm not knocking it down. But your platform, your sustainability, right? It creates a essence of peace. It creates calmness, harmony, even in the most resilient times. And we have been through some hard times. So are you making the time? Let this be the moment that you get to make the time and the space, which actually means you might have to say no to people and to maybe other activities that are coming along your way. You might now have to set some clear boundaries of how you are working and what you're focusing on. you might want to take away those distractions, right? I'm not going to tell you what those distractions are because you know better than I do what your distractions can be, and be honest about it, right? Don't pull your own leg. Don't be like, well, it's not that bad. Well, it is bad. It is that bad. It is that bad. Look at those distractions. Ask yourself, why do they repeatedly come back? Why were they there last year or maybe 2 years ago? Why is this happening each and every time? Maybe you're busy elevating yourself to a next level. That is, you know, something that you really have been looking forward to. And it looks like it's eluding you. And what I mean by that, it's like it's always around the corner. And every time when you turn the corner, it's gone. And it turned the corner. So you're constantly turning corners over and over and over. So it's eluding you. Why is that so? Maybe you're working hard at things that do not matter. So efficient and effective work. Maybe you need help. Maybe you need help from someone else or something else that will allow you to make the time and the space so that you can do what needs to be done right now. And we as people can have a really hard time asking others to help us, to do something for us. Could you help me with this? Because we don't want to feel vulnerable or dependable or, you know, weak. We don't want to appear as weak. We have chosen this path. We are doing this thing. This is my project, or this is our project. We can do it ourselves. But maybe it's now the time for you to ask for help. Maybe you do want to fix your mouth and say, help, I need it. Could you do this for me? Or hire the help, maybe. If you have that possibility in your budget to do so, why not hire the help? I've been talking for the longest that I want to have an assistant, and looking at the things, how they are going for me right now, I might want to do that. I might want to just, you know, push a couple of things away that somebody else can do. And it's really like admin things. And with admin, there's an abbreviation for administrative activities that I feel like, you know, even though I can do them and I'm pretty well at it, it is taking time out of my schedule that I can use for something else, i.e. painting. I can do more of that if I do less of something else. And if someone else can take that over, that would be awesome. That would be absolutely awesome. Another example, I've been looking into ways of using certain software to help me write copy for my captions and for a blog post, because it is sometimes really a struggle to come up with certain things by yourself. You know, my brain gets tired, you know, after a long day of doing whatever it is that I'm doing, and I still have to think about what I'm going to do with social media. Yo, my brain is tired. My brain is tired, people. My brain is saying, adios. I ain't going to do it anymore. I ain't going to think no more. So effective, efficient work, effective, efficient planning. Are you doing that for yourself? Are you being honest about it? Honesty plays a role in this too. So the question of today is, how are you feeling? And are you making the time? Think about it. So we had the question of today. So I thought you were already thinking about it. But before you start digging into that question, you know, digging into the question, we're going to put that, you know, to the side. I'm going to ask you to make time for something else, which I think is a very interesting perspective to have for the coming years ahead of us. Now, we all know that we have been through a lot of turmoil. I talk a lot about it in the episodes of the podcast because it's very relevant. A lot of the creatives, a lot of artists have been very much influenced and affected by the turmoil, the chaos, the wars, the confinement, the quarantine, we all have been affected one way or the other. And because of that, I really started to think about how a nation's perception or even people's lives, let's make it simple. A nation's perception is very broad and very abstract. Let's make it more specific. People's perception, people's lives, how they are, how it's going to be affected and how that will be reflected in the art that we create or the creative output that we are offering our audience. How will we see that back? How much of that has influenced us? Has it, you know, did it come to a standstill? Have we been disrupted by it? Have we been swayed into a certain way? Have we been censored, or are we still being censored? Are we aware of, have we become a little bit docile? Has that, you know, that roughness, that rebel that is within us to create the things that we observe, to use our superpowers basically as CNAs, has that come to a standstill? The way that art will imitate our lives. Because through centuries and centuries and centuries, like in the beginning of time, right? The explosion of the atom, and there it is, you know, the universe and all the planets that we see around us. The Big Bang, since the Big Bang, we have been creating art. We have been documenting, depicting, creating our languages, creating images, silent images, loud images. We have always been busy observing and using our talents, our superpowers as creators and artists to make sure that the peoples get to see, the peoples get to see what it is that is happening, to move them, to make them aware of where they are and stand as a human being. Basically, just really, really shortly, in a nutshell, that is what we do on a day-to-day basis. We use that superpower. So what happens when that superpower gets tampered with? And it doesn't mean that everybody has had that experience. And maybe not everybody recognizes it at that, right? Some people have been working straight back to back to back. But maybe you do have seen that your creative or your artistic output just looks a little bit different than normal, or is created in a different way. Or maybe your approach and your perspective towards your own work, towards your own creative output has changed, has been influenced. And that's not uncommon. It's not abnormal. What has happened is pretty abnormal. But the fact that you are influenced by it, that's not abnormal. Not at all. So that particular saying, art imitates life, even though that it sounds like a cliche, every cliche has its truth. We just have to face that. Every cliche has its truth. It has a core, a center, and there is the truth. It shows the ugliness, the horror, the chaos around us, but it also can show the beauty. It can unfold that what is remarkable, and which is still a wonder, and still the beauty, and still the humor, and maybe sometimes also the ridicule and the parody that we make of it, which is also important. We need to be able to let things go. We need to be able to laugh about things, even as hard as they can be. I don't know about you, but in my culture, the Afro-Caribbean culture, and specifically the Surinamese culture, laughter is oftentimes used to get through hard times. People make jokes, people go to the theater, people go to see a show, people go and dance and laugh and just let all of the problems go so that they can face another day. And in that way, art, laughter, and perception has always been used to elevate the energy and alleviate whatever is bringing us down. So parody, humor is also a part of art. And that all imitates life. Now, the last 3 years, one thing that we have seen and has been very impressionable upon our lives is the way that art literally moved itself from one place to the next. It literally went from a physical place, a physical location where people will go to museums, art organizations, you had art businesses, people actually coming together to enjoy and consume art or that creative output from the creative sector, and now having to move, hopefully, to a digital place, and if not, completely being shut down. So that is one of the outcomes of art imitating life after the pandemic. I think that is how we can actually look at this particular episode. Not necessarily how it moves after all the turmoil that we had, the pandemic and, you know, all the chaos and the political events and et cetera, et cetera. But it also makes you think, of course, how it's going to look in the future, how you're going forward and where you're standing right now. So we can go either way. It doesn't only have to go backwards. It's also going forwards. So like I said, the literal movement of art going from the physical realm into the digital realm. And it had to. It had to. If those art institutions, those big art institutions and creative industries needed to survive, one of the ways was to move to the digital platform. And I think for a lot of CNAs, a lot of creative and artists, that was the only thing to do. Now, I think a lot of us were already in that field. I think that the creative sector is already a lot more in the field of the digital art and the digital presence, using the sociables, the social platforms to put out the artwork. But what if you're a photographer and, you know, you are pretty much showcasing your work physically? What if you're a dancer and you pretty much are showcasing your talent physically on stage? And now that is not possible because everything is being shut down. Then the control just falls away and you have to create another form of expressing yourself and also bringing your product, your service to the people, and also sustain yourself, of course, as the creator so that you can pay some bills, okay? Let's be honest about that. So that you can have your income, so that you can pay your bills, but also sustain, of course, that thing that you love to do, your work, your craft. And I already talked in the previous episode, in season two, how beneficial actually this movement was, but also can be actually for us. And us, I mean us as CNAs. I don't know if you have noticed it, but what I saw, what I observed is that a lot of artistic and creative communities became smaller and they started to cut out the middleman. So helping each other, being more reliant of each other, trying to find resources within the means that you have, makes you a creative person, no pun intended. But it does make you a creative person. It makes you very creative in the way that you use your resources, when you use your resources, who you go to for those resources, and how you eventually bring out that output to your audience. So the communities that have came from that are very interesting to see. Very interesting developments in that. And I have a very beautiful example of that I will mention later on in the episode, of how something beautiful actually has been created from this particular situation. I believe it started, I think it started before, pre-COVID. But I can definitely say, of what I've seen, is that it continued itself and built itself to be a more solid and grounded platform. So more about that later. I'm not going to talk about it now. I'm going to talk about it later, which one it is. And when you hear it, I'm definitely going to know that you're going to be like, wait a minute, I never thought about that. that's actually pretty smart. And it is. It is pretty smart. So another perspective that I want to offer in the episode is that we as artists and creatives, one thing that I definitely want us to know in this particular era and the situation that we have been in, but that we are now going towards, is that we have more power than we believe to have. I think that a lot of us have felt absolutely powerless during this particular time and asking ourselves, what are we going to do? How are we going to do it? What are we capable of doing? You know, you can feel pretty powerless when somebody else or something else from outside is now regulating the way that you're working and what you're putting out there. And looking at the history of how art has been used, abused, and also misused, it still shows us that art is a very important factor in people's lives. It is a cultural inheritance that we cannot afford to wither away. It is a cultural heritage that you need to sustain. You need to water it. I think now so more than ever, where we see a lot of censorship, we see a certain level of propaganda. There is a strong level of propaganda. There is this program being pushed out where creativity, artisticness, the observance, the individuality of different types of output, and the remarkable things that are being put out is slowly being confined and numbed down and more regulated and trying to put into rules and into this cube, and this needs to be in this sphere, and this needs to be in this triangle, and art needs to be in this triangle. And we ain't here for the bullshit, though. We ain't here for the bullshit. But I still want you to see in a couple of points, on how important it is to understand that art will always have a cultural inheritance, and that you as a CNA have the power into that. Because if the culture dies, highly likely a nation will die, its imagination will die, its prosperity will die, its pride will die with it. And here are a couple of points that I've collected for you all. So it's kind of an art class. Art history class, but not very short. You know, I'm not going to bore you with all the numbers of years. Nah, we ain't here for that. I'm going to mention a couple of events. And I think by mentioning those events and then connecting them with the points that I'm putting here in this episode, that you can see the relevance of having art as the cornerstone of each nation and each cultural group, and also that the expression, the unique expression that are out here. Yeah, previously I said individual expression, individual output, but I meant unique output. Unique output, unique expressions need to be preserved. They need to be preserved. Whether you're a dancer, content creator, singer, painter, sculptor, you know, author, you need to preserve them. We need to preserve them. The voice needs to be preserved. It's not something that needs to be put into squares and other types of strange forms that I don't want to talk about. It sounds too much like mathematics. Oh my gosh. Going to the point. Art has always been used as a tool to sway opinions of people. It has been used to sway the opinions of people. And we can think of many ways how it has been done. I think one of the ways that is most recognizable are those American art war prints. Those American art war prints where you see Uncle Sam looking at you, be like, "We want you for the war." He's pointing at you and making it really clear that you are needed for the nation and that you need to serve the nation. War pictures of victory and how they have conquered the war, showing the defeat of the opponent. Artists have always been, played a role into that. The documentation, but also glorifying and showing the pride of a nation. Which actually brings me to the next point. And that is that art is a way of how we can bring out the perception of who's the villain and who is the uncorrupted one. So the corrupted one and the uncorrupted one. The villain and the hero. The angel and the devil. And unfortunately, this has been done in very cruel ways. A good example of that is, for instance, when it comes to certain cultural groups being depicted in a very demeaning, devaluing way. The war in Vietnam, where people from Asian countries, if you would only look at the cartoons, the illustrations, posters, etc., there was always this particular caricature of Asian people. The same goes from people from African descent. The bone in the nose, or people having a certain feature, or in movies, if you go way, way back, in movies, in silent movies, and even still this day it's being done by people. Blackface. In the Netherlands, that's still an issue. Blackface. But also being used in illustrations and also being used as art forms, accepted art forms in those times. And how it helps to sway a nation, how it helps to build the perception of what the goal and the vision needs to be of a nation, who is superior and who is inferior. Another point of art is that it always has been used as an unwritten language to convey the responsiveness of a nation or a culture or group. So that language is there to basically determine how a nation responds, or how a cultural group responds, or how the opponents respond to each other. I think that Kehinde Wiley is one of the artists that has created a beautiful, beautiful, absolutely stunning painting of Barack Obama. And I think it was in his last term where he created that painting. Absolutely stunning. Showing the depiction of somebody of stature, of somebody who has a big influence in the world, and depicting him in a way that this is how we see someone that is of color. This is how we can see someone that has a certain stature, a certain position. This is how we can see and actually literally give somebody their flowers as they have served the country. You have to see the painting, Kehinde Wiley. Beautiful, beautiful painting. Absolutely great artist. I follow his work. This man cannot do any wrong with me. I mean, he's a great inspiration for me. A great inspiration. He cannot do any wrong with me. All of his paintings are basically, if hopefully I'm saying it right, and I'm interpreting it also in the right way, all of his paintings are ways of showing how a certain cultural group, which in this case are people from the African descent, are being positioned in these, in a certain posture that was very familiar and very known in these Middle Age paintings and depictions. But he puts them in the current time with their own clothes and in their own stature and in their own presentation, but just in a particular position. That really makes you say like, oh wow. You know, because normally Black people from the African descent, people from African descent were not depicted in that way. It were only white people that were depicted in that way. And to take that initiative to put people in the current time in those very particular postures is a great way to reflect what is happening in this time of age, that people from the African diaspora are now seeing and still recognizing the worth that is needed for a correct representation of who we are and how we stand in life. Just to mention two things, two separate examples. You also take away the villain in that particular situation when you put a certain group or a nation into that, in that particular energy, in that vibe.
But there are also, you know, bad examples of that. Just to look at the Second World War, where Hitler was using a lot, was making
a lot of use of illustrators and drawers and artists to depict the purity of a nation, to depict the greatness of a nation, and also to villainize a certain cultural group. Again, swaying the opinion of a group of people and making sure that everybody's thinking the same, everybody's being indoctrinated with this unwritten language. So what we see in that particular time is that how one dictator, or several dictators in that particular time, but the one that we know that, you know, from that particular era, Hitler, Adolf Hitler, was using those artists to really indoctrinate a whole nation of knowing who the villain was and who was the uncorrupted one. Who was the one that is pure, and how do you get a pure nation? And having that unwritten language just perpetuating within a nation, and really, you know, creating a cultural group into villains. And art has played a role in that. There was this article that I read, and I do not remember who said it. But in that article, that person said, every artist has a price. And in the time of war and chaos, and the right price is being set, that artist will create what is being asked of him. And I do not disagree with that. I wouldn't say that I would be that person, but I do not disagree with that. Because with all the depictions and documentation of all those gruesome things that have happened, some artists did have a price, and some artists didn't have a choice. They didn't have a choice. It was either their life being equal to the price they probably had to pay if they didn't cooperate for that. Another point that I find very interesting when it comes to how important art is and how we need to preserve the cultural inheritance of art and our uniqueness within that. And basically, you know, keep our fingers on it, you know, keep the power to us, sway back into our corner, is the fact that now that we are coming in a time where wars are being started left and right, and chaos is being created, nations are being demolished, censorship becomes more and more apparent in our day-to-day life, the stealing, the glorifying, or the documentation of art is being questioned. There are many examples of how the glorification of big dictators and big statuesque people who are being depicted within art to glorify themselves and also to see themselves as these great leaders, a great nation, and to really amplify that message. Again, going back to that point where I just mentioned, giving that unwritten language really to influence the responsiveness of a nation or a cultural group. But also the theft of art, which is basically you as a nation, when you steal somebody else's art, you automatically make a nation inferior. You put a nation into a place where they are culturally just in a state of poverty. You're taking away something that represents who they are, their values, their cultures, the creative goods all those beautiful jewels. And by stealing that, especially in a time of war, in a time of slavery, in a time of, you know, chaos when it happens, it basically was a way of the conqueror saying, I got you. I got you, I got your nation, and I got what used to belong to you, and it's now mine. And if I have your art in my possession, then I basically get to say how you now operate and what it is that you do. You literally can bring a nation to their knees by doing that. That's one of the good things. People underestimate, excuse me, how much of an influence that can have on a nation. It's not just the depletion of resources, natural resources, or stealing money or information, or the killings and the murderings and of people, but it's definitely also the theft of the art that has taken place. And we don't have to pretend that it hasn't taken place, because we can go into many European museums, American museums, North American museums, and West European museums, where we will find art from the Southern Hemisphere. Beautiful pieces of unique art that are ages and ages and ages old, being held as quote unquote collections. But what these national museums actually have, or local museums actually have, is somebody's heritage. You have somebody's heritage and it doesn't belong to you. Now, some countries have taken the steps and have also performed the act of giving back the art. But the thing that I find very interesting in that is, even though you're giving back somebody's art, the many, 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 many dollars, the amount of dollars, the many, many amounts of dollars that have been made through visitations, expositions, documentaries, what have you not, that have been made, will not be compensated to these countries. So that is another way of how the theft, the glorification of that particular theft, and how it is then being documented. I mean, I think it's very noble for a lot of countries to say we're going to give back the art, and that is not being compensated to those countries. That is not being given back to those countries. None of the countries have said, we have made X amount of dollars, we're going to give you 55% of that, because we made a good substantial money out of it. So it's only fair to give you a little bit over 55%, or at least 50% of it. None of them are saying that. So giving back art is just one part of the step that needs to be made. And I say it so many times in my episodes in this podcast, especially when you are an individual, independent CNA, that the way that you set your value, the way that you set your price, is just necessary. You need to be aware of it, and you need to set your price, people. In this particular example that I've mentioned, which I think is something that we all need to actually learn from and apply that on a micro level. What I just mentioned was a macro level, nations depleting other nations from their cultural heritage and their art. You can also apply that on a micro level. If you don't stand for your art and you don't take back power of your art, and looking at how everything has involved itself, the pandemic, COVID, and everything else, rules and regulations, if you do not create that good, solid platform for yourself that you have control over, you will come into a situation where you can actually be very vulnerable. Maybe that's better to say it in that way. You can be vulnerable for a situation where you will be pulling on the short end of the stick, because other people get to dictate what the value of your art is. Other people get to dictate what it is. If they cannot see it, or they cannot glorify it, or they cannot get a bigger percentage out of it, then you get the shorter end of the stick. So it's really important to be hands-on to that, in that, to be aware of that, and also to see how important art is in that particular situation, and in general. Art puts things into a higher level. Just think about it. When you create art, your creativity, all the output from it is coming from a place where you are the most vulnerable and most open. And it comes from something that is very intangible. But what comes out of it can be tangible. So it is an energy exchange. And what to think if we would be coming into a situation where that energy exchange is being numbed down or being censored, or it has to be in a certain way, or it's used for propaganda, or it's being used to villainize certain people or to uncorrupt other people and certain actions. When it's being used to indoctrinate people, basically coming into the wrong hands. But at the same time, it has created actually this hub of documentation to teach us in this particular moment how we can do it differently, and how we can take back that power, and how we can actually use art to make some beautiful creative things, even if they can be ugly, even if they can be beautiful. It's still in the eyes of the beholder. But we take back that power. I think that's the most important part about it. Now, I promised at the beginning that I would mention an example right now in this particular moment in how artists are taking back their power. And the reason why I'm so adamant on using practical, real-life examples, whether it's about my own journey or other people's journey, is because I want to step away from the fluff. I want to step away from the place where people are like talking in generalities, right? Talking in the abstract. You know what? Leave that for philosophy class. We want to hear the concrete. We want to hear what's happening in these streets, right? We want to hear how we can use the information. Give me something I can work with, because I'm a little bit tired of listening to podcasts that do that. So that's why I talk a lot about my own experiences and give the good, the bad, and the ugly. But I also go out to look for other examples where you can see the good, the bad, and the ugly. And in this case, it's actually the good that came from the ugly. So it came from a place where the need for artists to be more in control over how they can sell their art, and that they have the power to sell the art to whomever they want to, created a platform called Artist Support Pledge. The website of it is also called artsupportpledge.com. Based in the UK, started by one person. Go to the website, you will find more information about that. But here it is in a nutshell. It is basically a hashtag, artist support pledge, a logo in the form of a tile that artists can use when they post a picture of their artwork online on the social media platform. And in this case, it is Instagram. I don't know if they have a Facebook page, probably so. If not, the Instagram page is definitely a place where you can go to and find them. So the artist that posts that picture with that tile on the picture, with that hashtag, and with the prices that are being set as the price range for this in this context, and I think it's 200, 300, 500, but not above that, people get to DM the artist and say, hey, I want to buy that painting. They settle it. Painting is bought. Painting is being exchanged. And the artist being paid for the art. And that can go on for quite some time until the artist reaches the amount of $1,000, euros, yen, Canadian dollars, you name it, whatever currency they are using it for themselves. And the moment that when they reach that threshold, they then themselves support another artist within the pledge by buying a painting within that price range. So 200, 300, 400, 500, not going above that. So basically promising to do the same based on goodwill, based on good faith, and it has grown out into a very successful platform, a very successful concept. I do have to say that the framework in itself is not new. It's not a new framework. It is something that has always existed, using my heritage in the Surinamese culture, and I think in other cultures, African, Caribbean-based cultures as well. It's like a money system, a balance system, where a group of people come together, agree to pay all the same amount each every month, and each person gets the chance to take the whole sum total of that month. For instance, 10 people, each person pays $100 each and every month, and the total in that month is going to each person
in a different month. So everybody gets a chance to get $1,000 or 1,000 euros or 1,000 yen, whatever. So the system in itself already existed.
When I really started to dig into the framework, I was like, oh, but wait a minute, this already existed. I don't know, this already existed. But the fact that they have applied it within the art, in the art culture, in art market, excuse me, that is new. That is innovative, right? Because we haven't seen that before. At least I haven't seen that before, not implemented in that way. But the framework itself, listen, that already existed. The wheel was already invented, but how they have now placed the wheel, that's new. It's also something, when you look at it, that can be done in a physical present. So people can go to a gallery and then see the work of different artists and then buy the painting that they want to paint, give the money to the artist directly. But it can also be done digitally. So people can go online and contact and DM the artist. They don't need to go to the gallery. They can contact the artist directly saying, hey, I saw it. I see that you're from the artist support pledge. Artist support pledge. And I want to buy your art. Going directly to the artist, going directly to the source. And in this way, you sustain a community that helps each other. Artists for artists are helping each other, and also people from outside coming in and supporting the artists as well. Another beautiful thing about it is that it's affordable art. So it's not art in the thousands and thousands of euros. It's art that is affordable, that artists are willing to offer to their audience, of course. What they're willing to offer, they don't have to, but what you're willing to offer to your audience. And it's also something that is global. You can apply this anywhere. I don't have to be in a certain location. I don't have to be signed onto a certain gallery. I don't have to be a certain type of artist. If you have art, you want to sell it, and it's in line with the guideline rules, the guidelines and the rules, hey, you're good to go. And that is a beautiful initiative that I believe will even strengthen itself more for the future. You see, more and more communities, our communities, creative communities, are becoming smaller because we were so confined and we had to rely on the resources that we have. So we became very inventive, we became creative. And now we are moving along with those communities because we start to see that those abstract, huge, complicated, bureaucratic guidelines that are out there, set within the art sector, set within the creative sector, might not be serving us as much as we think they are serving us. And by taking back that power, we are now allowing us to determine how the art is being is being implemented, how we put out the message, how we want to convey to a cultural group or a nation, the preserving the cultural inheritance, making sure that our account balance is in the plus and will not be depleted by percentages and commissions that are giving away from somebody's income, basically. All the points that I've just mentioned, I didn't just do that for nothing. I definitely did that to make a connection to the current time where we are in now and how communities are now actually creating that for themselves and taking the center within that. So going from a centralized point to a decentralization of what is happening. And that is something that I find very beautiful to see. And I can support that. I definitely can support that. I definitely can find myself in that happening for the coming time. I also think that it's chaos proof. It's pandemic proof. Because now you have to label things as chaos proof and pandemic proof, COVID proof, any disease proof, any type of disaster proof. It has to be disaster proof. If you have a framework, a platform that is disaster proof, you're winning, because you don't need no big institutions then to back you up. Because let's be honest, the big institutions needed the backup. The big institutions were asking for subsidies and help and money to sustain themselves. So where does the power really lie? Where is the power really situated? Where is it located? Brings a couple of things into perspective. I don't know if you have thought of that particular perspective, but I hope that this brings it for you. You know, it adds to you being like, oh, well, wait a minute. They are not that big and strong. No, exactly. No, not at all. They are huge in size, of course, and what they are pushing out into the public. But eventually, even they were in a very vulnerable position. So it just shows the vulnerability in many, many ways. And that's why I said, I forgot what the number of the episode is. I'm so, But in a particular episode, I said, that's why it is important that is the time where you start solidifying your foundation, your platform, because if you can see that they, and by they I mean those big art institutions, galleries, creative organizations, etc., etc., all of that were almost falling from the ground into the abyss, what does that say to you? That more of your reliance and your faith and your power lies within you than it does with those big institutions. I'm not saying demolish them and burn them all down. They have a place. You just have to put it into perspective. It's relative. It's not absolute. Get it? It's relative. It's not absolute. They are not absolute entities. It's relative. That is definitely what the last couple of years have shown us. It's relative. You can cooperate, but you do not have to be a slave to it. We can come together and co-create, but you do not have to be a slave to it. Right? So I hope that that is a perspective that I think I could make clear to you, and also make, you know, connecting the dots. Connecting the dots of how that centralized vision of all those points that I've mentioned in the beginning can actually be flipped around and decentralized. All of that, bringing the power to the people. Power to the people. So that is it. That's the whole show. Second show is now done. Second episode of the season. I like this episode. I really, really do like this episode. I love making these type of comparisons and sharing those perspectives with you all, and just, you know, just picking your brain, just stimulating those cells, making you think, right? I say this all the time in this podcast, through the podcast, that I only get here to gift them to you. And it is to you if you receive them, if you want to implement them. That work is for you. And I think it's also a beautiful thing if you get to have that choice of implementing things yourself, implementing things the way that you want to have them done in that way. So I hope that you ask yourself that question. What is in there for me? How can I solidify my platform? Again, your platform doesn't have to be 10,000 people strong, right? You don't have to have 10,000 followers. Sis, bruh, no, you don't have to. Start with where you are. The platform can be just you, maybe some other peers that you're working with, and y'all do what you can do. Y'all do what you can do and keep that energy high up. Like I already said, art is an energetic exchange, right? Coming from the intangible all the way to the tangible. So it is a energetic exchange. We do have that superpower. We literally can transform something that is not here into something that is here. If that ain't no some magic tricks, then I don't know what to tell you. Okay? I don't know what to tell you. Ludini ain't got nothing on me. So that is it. That is all. Just to make sure that everybody knows how this works, you get to see the show, the visual of the podcast as I'm recording it on my Patreon. The audio is available on all available platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, excuse me, and also on the Anchor platform. You can also go to the website of The Creative Vault and support me over there. I hope you enjoyed the episode. I will see you next time, and be blessed. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Your attention has been very much appreciated. Make sure to follow and subscribe to our social media platforms. See you next week.